Welcome, everybody, to episode 293 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, November 1st, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Jay Tripp.
Hello.
That was really fast there. Woo. Hey, what's up, John? Welcome back for another week of exciting. I was going to say a word, but it probably would come out wrong, so I'll just leave it at exciting week of WordPress news.
exciting news. If news could be exciting, I think that we would have the most exciting WordPress news that there is to have.
Exactly. Yeah. It's beginning of November. So I tweeted out that this is the countdown to WordPress mayhem, and maybe mayhem was not the word to use, but there's going to be a major release of WordPress this month, WordPress 4.9, which we'll talk a little bit about in the show. And at the end of the month will be the big brouhaha WordPress WordCamp US held in Nashville, Tennessee, where I imagine a lot of hot chicken will be consumed by people. Probably for a lot of people, but probably for the first time. I've never had hot chicken.
Hot chicken is as delicious as it sounds.
Oh, all right. I'm not one for spicy foods, let me tell you. So I mean if I had my choice between Nashville hot chicken or Carolina Gold, you know, with the Colonel Sanders, I'd probably go with the Carolina Gold.
That's okay. That's why. That's the decisions, not options. You've made the choice.
That's beautiful. Beautiful.
It's good.
Well, I love how we somehow brought a WordPress development philosophy with chicken. I mean, it's a fantastic thing you've done there.
And I think it is. It's totally a countdown to WordCamp US. Not mayhem. Shenanigans, maybe. WordCamp. I don't know. Yeah. Mayhem makes it sound like it might be unsafe.
It has a negative connotation to
it. It does sound a little dangerous.
That's just the first thing I thought of, which is usually a bad thing anyways. First thing I think of.
Shenanigans. So, word camp shenanigans. Word nanigans.
Word. Okay, I think we ought to move on here and just dive right in. So one of the first things we have to talk about is there's a point release the other day, WordPress 4.8.3, which is a security release. This is for 4.8.2 and all previous versions. And what this release does is it addresses an issue with the WPDB prepare statement that could lead to a potential SQL injection. And while WordPress core itself is not vulnerable, a security hardening has been added to prevent plugins and themes from inadvertently causing a vulnerability. So, but if I wrote about this on the Tavern, and this is a little bit of a deja vu moment for some people, because WordPress 4.8.2 attempted to solve the same problem. Now, Anthony Ferreira, apologize, sir, if I'm butchering your name, but he reported and disclosed a vulnerability. In fact, shortly after 4.8.2 was released, he created a trad ticket and saying that the underlying issue was not solved. And in fact, the patch that was in WordPress 4.8.2 actually broke a lot of sites due to the way the code worked. So he wrote up a long post about how the WordPress security team sort of ignored him, or his security port was ignored for about 6 weeks or some amount of time. And finally, when it got the attention of the security team, they once again only wanted to fix a subset of the problems and not the underlying issue. So he went back and forth, and he used his Twitter account to announce that, okay, if they're not going to take me seriously, then I'm going to do a full disclosure. And he threatened to do a full disclosure on Twitter. That tweet received hundreds of retweets. It was liked by a lot of people. And I think that publicity had an effect, because constructive discussions resumed with the WordPress security team. In fact, a brand new person, sort of somebody with fresh eyes and a fresh perspective on things, reread all of the discussion that had taken place and then got with Anthony on a few things, clarified a few things, and finally things started to move in the right direction thanks to this person with a brand new perspective. And they worked together really quickly after that. Once everybody was on the same page, they got a patch working, and next thing you know, 4.8.3 was released. And Anthony published an article about the technical details of the vulnerability, but also about his overall experience with the WordPress security team. And although in the beginning he was very frustrated, understandably so, At the end of the day, he's now cautiously optimistic and hopeful and hopes that the security team will be better from this experience in the future with future security reports.
So I feel like, you know, full disclosure before I make too much comment, having held the privilege of being a long-term member of the WordPress security team myself, this is one of those really important experiences to take note of, I think, for everybody, because it was not an easy fix, and it really is kind of a bum deal to feel like you're not being listened to, and to have I don't even necessarily say like advanced knowledge, but like to have for someone like Anthony to have identified a problem and to have responsibly disclosed it and to feel like he wasn't getting listened to is not a super good setup for anybody. It's not even just WordPress security team specific, but like, you know, anytime you have to take to Twitter with a complaint is kind of, it's not the best place to do that, especially if you know that you have an impactful following. And Anthony's well known and liked within the PHP community, and not just WordPress, but PHP in general. And so him having words about the WordPress security team is impactful. And when he had identified on the, and I don't think this is anything that he hasn't said in his blog post, but when he noticed that the issue wasn't fully fixed in 4.8.2, and he had commented in HackerOne to that effect, I was the one who ultimately stuck my neck out to say, let's look into this again. Like, if you're adamant that this is not really fixed and we're not seeing it, then let's scrutinize this a little bit more deeply. And granted, I wasn't the one to make the call and make the fix and everything, but this is one of those intricate fixes that took several weeks and like 23 iterations in patches to come to what ultimately lands in not only just WordPress 4.9, like for the current release of WordPress, but to backport that fix all the way back to what, 3.7, I think. And so not every WordPress is created equal, and all the unit tests and testing suite has to pass and make sure that all the variations are fixed and plugins aren't broken. I mean, it was kind of a big deal. And so, I mean, I don't know that Anthony is necessarily listening, and I don't even know that I can speak on behalf of anyone else, but the security team tries really hard, and it is still largely like a volunteer driven thing. And so,
which is something, the volunteer aspect is something that Anthony pointed out and says, look, I understand they're volunteers. I understand what's going on here.
I hate leaning on that. It's such a bum. It's like, it's a cop out, and I don't like using that. I don't want to feel like I'm using that as like an excuse for anything. But I think it is one of those things that everyone can recognize has areas and room for improvement, and you know, at least behind the scenes, as much as I can feel comfortable saying, and I hate to think behind the scenes, but on the security side of it, it's sort of intentionally that way. And so everyone is listening and paying attention and trying to be better and regrouping and listening. And so ultimately the best case scenario is that the security team continue to improve and get better, and honestly make allies within the other communities that aren't just WordPress, that folks like Anthony too can feel comfortable and continue being involved, because it is fresh minds like Anthony's and other people's and from other projects that ultimately make WordPress better. So,
yeah. And for those who don't know, full disclosure is the process of publicly sharing technical details of a vulnerability so that the public knows the same amount of information about it as hackers. And the threat of full disclosure is, in my experience from what I've read, is usually used to pressure businesses and software vendors to act swiftly and release patches as soon as possible. So I was wondering if the threat of full disclosure of this particular vulnerability is one of the driving forces behind why this was maybe it encouraged people to speed up or whatnot. So I asked Aaron Campbell, who is the WordPress security team lead, and he says that the threat of disclosure certainly adds pressure and possibly stress, but it doesn't actually change the overall equation that much. He says an issue isn't more severe because it's going to be disclosed, but it could become more rushed, meaning a higher likelihood of mistakes.
That's exactly the problem. That is exactly the problem with like the threat of full disclosure is zero to 60 to zero. It is a crash into a wall kind of where you have no choice but to react to an emergency situation. And so it is sort of the ace in the hole for security researchers to say, if you do not move as quickly as I would prefer for you to, then I have this option that I will go and release this out into the world. And so it is a trump card that you kind of, someone who is a professional security researcher doesn't want to play that card very often. And this was sort of one of those opportunities to, it was a potentially serious issue. The issue itself wouldn't necessarily be super easy to exploit out in the wild without having some other piece of code get in the way to make it happen. But all things considered, with the way that piece of code is written, with drop-ins and other things, it is 100%. Especially if you feel like you're not being listened to. I mean, I think that's ultimately what this comes down to, is if no one is listening to you and you know that you are right, then the only thing you can do is kindly let people know, I'm going to open this up to the world to get help if I feel like I'm not getting the help from you that I expect. Mm-hmm. So this is what people do with their local governments, with their neighbors, with their friends, whatever. You say, I'm not comfortable with the relationship I have with you, and so I go to the police, or I'm not comfortable with the way that things are happening with my job, and so you go to human resources or whatever, right? Like, this is a security researcher publicly discloses their findings, and if anything, it's nice that he was kind enough to give the security team a heads up that he was doing it or thinking about doing it, so that we had the opportunity to work together a second time around. So
the security team thanked Anthony for practicing responsible disclosure, which
for sure
generated some conversation on Twitter as to possibly renaming responsible disclosure to coordinated disclosure. So I asked Aaron Campbell about that. You know, what about this? What were his thoughts on this terminology change? And he says he doesn't know what really it's aiming to accomplish. He says that he does see how some places use this particular phrasing, but honestly, he doesn't see how it conveys anything that's not already generally understood with the responsible disclosure terms.
I agree. And responsible disclosure, I think, is appropriately named for what security teams are expecting. It definitely, the name biases it towards, like, this is the right thing to do. To be responsible with what you have, you have to tell the people what you've found. Coordinated disclosure, to me, sounds like what you do when there are multiple projects that you need to coordinate a release or a security fix around. So there is similar code between WordPress and Drupal, or even with Django, even with a different framework, there's similar regular expressions used for escaping and whatnot. So if this was to be a vulnerability that actually spanned across multiple projects or teams, that to me sounds like a coordinated disclosure or coordinated release, versus the responsible thing to do is to, you know, call security when you see an unmanned bag at the airport. That is the responsible thing to do. A bug like this in the code is a rogue bag that is loose in the airport, and someone should responsibly disclose it. So I like the term responsibly disclosed, because to me it sounds appropriate.
Users are encouraged to update to 4.8.3 as soon as possible. For a lot of you out there, it probably happened automatically and you received an email saying, hey, your WordPress is all up to date. And you were like, oh, wow, auto updates are so cool because they work for most people. But this release did change. This particular change in code changed the behavior of the escape SQL. I don't know, what would you call that, John? A function, filter, something, a query?
Well, the escape, those escaping functions are deep within the WordPress database class, like the layer that interacts with the MySQL database and the way that all of your WordPress asks for data to and from it. So that escaping function is really, really anything that deals with database escaping is very, very, very important. And so it is a method, really, in a function that everything ends up getting run through. So is very, very important. And it is almost everything in WordPress leans very heavily on top of that piece of code. So fixes to it are slow and methodical.
And Tim Nolte, he left a comment on the article on the Tavern. He says, I think the challenge with security issues is trying to balance end user security related safety versus breaking their sites. It's almost a catch 22 issue, since from a security perspective, a secure broken site is better than a functioning site with security issues. Unfortunately, it's hard as a plugin to have that sort of conversation with a user. And he's replying to another comment. He says, but as you stated, users don't actually care why their site broke, even if it is a good thing. And says security is hard, and I don't see there being an all encompassing answer. And we've actually seen this before in some other plugins where, or other security related releases where you update them and your site, W3 Total Cache, I think it, yeah. Sure. So right. they had a security vulnerability. People updated their version, and in fact, it actually broke a lot of other things that people were using, and a lot of users actually downgraded and were willing to have a insecure site versus one that was secure but had the functions they relied on or the features were broken.
Yep. Well, the security on the web right now is really hard, especially like to Tim's point is it's like having a website that is publicly facing in the world is like having someone knock on your front door of your home like every 2 seconds. And if everyone that knocked on the door turned the handle to see if the door was open, you would want to lock your doors all day, every day. And a lot of people don't think that they're visitors to their WordPress site. They think of them as people. Or if you have an EDD or WooCommerce site, you think of your visitors as you know, potential customers. But the majority of web traffic is like malicious and nefarious purposes. There's bots just looking for doors that are open. They're looking for open.
All you got to do is look at like the brute force login attempts plugin. Yeah. That's part of Jetpack, and it tells you in the dashboard how many login attempts it's blocked, and it's for the Tavern now it's in the millions.
Yeah, right. And so if anything is publicly like if someone can hack your database through a comment form, there are going to be bots that are going to hit that, 1,000 times a second. So that's what makes public disclosure so scary, is that it means that you give everyone out in the world a heads up that somebody's door is unlocked. And if you're looking to get into a house, that's the house to go inside. And that's the way to do it. And that's pretty scary stuff. So that's, I think, ultimately why it really is a trump card that you want to play. If you've got it, you want to play it sparingly, because doing so for a project that is so popular, at least so prevalent across the web, means exposing innocent users instantly and giving the bad guys, and you know, doing my air quotes, giving the bad guys advanced knowledge of something that that the people that are tasked on fixing that problem, the people who have to install the new lock on every door in the house, you know, they've got limited time to do it. So it's good that this all came together. I'm really happy that Anthony and everyone else was able to get this, you know, taken care of and pushed out and summarized really nicely. And you know, we're hopefully bluer skies and greener pastures going forward.
And bluer waters too. Let's throw that in there. WordPress 4.9 has finally reached the release candidate stage. Now, release candidate means they think that they're done. However, there may be a few things that need to be fixed, which is why we have this release candidate phase. They expect to ship WordPress 4.9 on Tuesday, November 14th, but they need your help to get there. So now is the time. If you're a plugin author, if you're a theme author, if you're an end user with a staging site with a complex setup, right now is the time to be testing everything you got with WordPress 4.9 to make sure that you can easily upgrade when it comes time to do so, when it's actually released. And you could do so with the WordPress Beta Tester plugin. That makes it really easy to test WordPress 4.9 and also bleeding edge versions of WordPress on a staging site. And some of the things you can test inside of WordPress is a lot of stuff dealing with the customizer, scheduling changes, previewing changes, switching themes, browsing themes within the customizer. There's also some changes with widgets that we're going to get to here in a little bit. And there's all kinds of other things as well in WordPress 4.9 that users need to take a look at. And if you encounter a bug, if you have the wherewithal, please, you can report it on track with a ticket. Or even better yet, for most of us users out there, something I like to do is there's an alpha beta section on the forum. And that's where I go to report a bug or an issue I encountered. And it's also a good way to crowdsource these things. So if other people are experiencing the same issue, you can either chime in on the thread that's already been created, or other people could say, you know, hey, yeah, I'm having that too. And it could help coordinate things. And usually those forums are monitored by the forum moderators, the volunteers, and they will actually create track tickets on the user's behalf and notify the core developers, hey, this is something that you may need to look into, and they might create a track ticket for you. So pretty nice system going on there. And 4.9 is around the corner. And it's part of our, I was going to say mayhem again, but it's part of our WordPress monthly extravaganza. I'll call it that way. That way it sounds like a cool thing.
The WordPress smorgasbord.
Yeah, the WordPress smorgasbord. And speaking of 4.9, it will support short codes and embedded media in the text widget. So the text widget recently had Tiny MCE support added to it through 4.8. And 4.8 also brought us the video and audio media widgets. And in 4.9, you'll be able to use short codes in the text widget without the help of additional code from plugins and themes. This was actually an 8-year-old track ticket. So it's kind of been in the works for 8 years. And Weston Reuter explained in the track ticket, he says, one of the reasons for the long delay with adding short code support in text widgets was due to many short codes looking for the global post when they run. And since the global post varies depending on whatever the query is, the short codes in a text widget could render wildly different on different templates of a site. The solution worked out was to temporarily notify the global post, which I believe is a variable, right, John? Global post variable. Before doing the short code so that they will consistently have the same global state with this global post variable then restored after the short codes are done. So there's short codes, all this other stuff added in there. But he says if a plugin has added do short code to widget text, this filter would be suspended while the widget runs to prevent short codes from being applied twice. In addition to that, there's a new core gallery widget. The video widget will have expanded support for OEmbed providers, which is something I'm happy about. There's an add media button now to the text widget, so that'll make it easy for you to add images, audio, or other media to a text widget. And Weston Reuter says, ultimately what this does is it'll closely align or put things in line for blocks in Gutenberg. So he says, text widget will align with the nested blocks in Gutenberg and will be treated as classic text blocks in any future migration from widgets to blocks. So some people commented and said, you know, this is a weird, strange they're allowing short codes to be in text widgets, but yet in Gutenberg, it's everything would be a block. However, as we can see here, they already know what the future is with Gutenberg and blocks. This just kind of will probably, it brings this functionality to us today with text widgets, but makes it easy to migrate over to blocks at some point down the line.
I don't think it makes anything any easier. I mean, really, well, short codes and widgets.
On paper.
Blocks, sure. But I think this just goes to show that even though like the REST API is the great new thing, that there will still be improvements that inevitably happen to the old XML RPC API. And when a new API that isn't REST comes, there's going to be enhancements that still cover all these things. So the fact that widgets are finally getting shortcode support baked into core doesn't mean has nothing to do with Gutenberg or blocks at all. They are two completely unrelated things. But I do think that we are going to see, I have no doubt in my mind, the number of plugins that are in the repo that do really fun, but also kind of weird things with short codes and widgets together. Something is going to break. Like if you search the plugin repo for widgets or short codes, you only get about 415 pages worth. So, the majority of them have something to do with widgets and short codes. There's even a plugin that I found. The name of the plugin is Widget Shortcode. This plugin has 60,000 installs and it adds a widget shortcode in brackets where you can add widgets as shortcodes in posts. So like there is going to be widget shortcode text area inception in places where without fail, something is going to break. But all of the fail safes, I've looked at the code, all of the fail safes that you can really have in core to prevent breakage are in there. So now is the time for anyone that has plugins that have short codes to make sure that their short codes work in widgets.
Patreon. How many sites have you gone to nowadays, John, where people have a Patreon?
So like all of them, like every single one of them actually. Yeah. Now.
Yeah. So the service was created in May 2013. So it's about 7 years old. And what it does is it has business tools that allows content creators to crowdfund their work through donations and subscriptions. So what they've done is they've actually launched an app directory and a developer portal with a free WordPress plugin that offers basic membership capabilities. So this plugin uses the Patreon API to tell the WordPress site who is a Patreon and what pledge level they are at. And patrons can click on the Connect with Patreon button that's included with the plugin, and site owners will have the ability to publish posts that are viewable by patrons only. And it also includes an option to provide an ad-free experience for patrons visiting the site. And Sarah Gooding did a wonderful write-up about this plugin on the Tavern. It's licensed under the Apache License version 2.0, so it's open source. So that's pretty cool. And they also have a Patreon Plugin Pro, which adds a few more features, such as you can make an entire site Patreon only with a single click. There's a custom banner notification for non-patrons, things of that nature. Usage of the plugin is about $30 a year. This includes updates and support. And last month, Patreon announced that the company raised $60 million in new funding, and there's going to be some new integrations coming. In fact, so now they have apps for WordPress, Zapier.
Zapier makes you happier. Zapier, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Zapier. I got hell for that on last week's show. Discord, Slack, and other services. So Patreon's is showing up everywhere. I'm seeing the Patreon button on everybody's websites. And it's really, I guess, just a new entrant or a new way of creating subscription-based sites I'm able to tell.
Patreon is doing what I think everyone really expected for other kind of donation type services to do. Like there's no reason why the folks at Indiegogo or GoFundMe or other ones that were established and maybe slightly more popular, there's no reason they couldn't have done the same thing that Patreon's doing. So I think that they're it's probably a smart move to open their app directory the way that they have. I don't really like the way that it is right now, though. Like, I don't really like Patreon's app directory. I hope that it gets better. And I really, even looking at the Patron plugin pro, like, it's not particularly good looking. And I was kind of surprised.
Good looking from a UI point perspective?
Like, well, yeah. Like, it doesn't really look like a... Like, I guess I'm not trying to be critical, but I think I'm accidentally being critical. Like,
that's how you really feel, John. Come on.
I guess it just seems like a plugin that's representing Patreon as a brand would have a tighter integration with WordPress and look more the WordPress way and represent Patreon directly than the Patron plugin pro is like a completely different for profit WordPress plugin that's done by a third party, CodeBard, that is more branded about CodeBard than it is about Patreon. I don't know. I think it's early days, and so I'm not trying to be too overly critical about what these things look like.
I'm looking at the screenshots now, and I see what you're saying. And okay, now it makes sense.
So yeah, like on the Patron plugin pro page on the app directory on Patreon, I guess I expected better. And so when you install it, this is what you get. This is what it is. And so for $30, man, I think people expect more for this. So I hope that it will improve. I think that it's early days, and so we can expect that it will. But yeah, I guess, you know, I'd expect more from a $30 than what this is.
All right. That's my two cents. Your two cents is valuable. Your two cents is worth more than my two cents. I'm pretty sure.
Nope, our 2 cents are worth the same 2 cents. It's still 2 cents. And, you know, in a country that doesn't even really make pennies anymore, 2 cents is not.
Thanks for bringing that up. Thanks for reminding me. So the WordPress.org user survey is available now. I encourage all of our listeners to take it. You'll see a link. If you visit WordPress.org, there's a red thing at the top of your screen. It says, take the 2017 user survey. And I was going to do that. And then I thought, well, hey, you know what? The past few years now, we haven't seen any results. In the first paragraph of the survey, it says results will be shared at WordCamp US. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, right. They haven't been shared in the past 2 years. So, you know, who are they trying to fool? So I wrote this up and said, hey, you know, if you take the user survey, which is one of the major ways, you know, it's filled out by thousands of people. It has been within the past few years. It's one of the ways that we see trends and how people use WordPress, what they like about WordPress. There's some questions in there where you could figure out the demographics a little bit of the people who use WordPress. And I was kind of miffed that, you know, hey, if I'm going to take this survey, the least you could do is share those results in aggregate with the public, you know, take away all the personal identifiable information. And in 2015, those results weren't shared. 2016, the results weren't shared. So I wrote an issue about it on the Tavern, and Andrea Middleton actually responded to the post and said, thanks for bringing up the issue. The results from 2015 and 16 were not published. What she says was an unintentional oversight, and you can expect a post on WordPress News with data from those surveys before the end of the year. So I imagine that we're going to see the results of the 2017 survey this year, either at a separate session or during the State of the Word. And when those are published to the site, the other years will be published as well, which of course makes sense. And then we're all happy again. We have the data. We'll be able to see trends over the past few years, and I'll be happy about taking the survey again.
We've done surveys for the BBs every year. I mean, for probably at least the past 4 or 5. Mercy Me has done them both for the BBs. She does an outstanding job of compiling the results into really informative, lengthy, but still really super educational blog posts.
And I enjoy those posts, by the way.
But the hardest part is doing something about that data. Like, it's really
informative. It's a lot of data.
But it is a lot of data. And so one of the things that the WordPress survey is always a little, it's kind of lengthy also, but I would like for our surveys, if we do them this year, to like to really truly guide the direction that those projects go, because I don't know that we've used those as roadmaps, at least for the BBs, and without publishing the other ones the past 2 years for WordPress, it kind of makes it, it at least gives off the impression that those survey results are not really being used or appreciated the way that.
Well, I think it also gives the tinfoil hat brigade out there ammo and say, hey,
yeah,
whoa, you're hiding all the data. It's only for automatic size, you know, stuff like that. Even though I don't believe it.
I agree. I don't believe it either. But it's a lot of this is perception based stuff. And so
right. If
we can improve the perception that everyone is being open and forthcoming with stuff, only is good stuff. And so that's why, you know, hat tip and kudos and much appreciation to Mercy Me for the BBs, because she's owned those surveys for years and has done a great job. So.
Yeah, and in addition to having to sort through and present the data in a pretty way that's understandable for users, which is, you know, a beast in and of itself. What about how difficult is it to actually create the survey, come up with the right question so that what you're getting is actionable? I think that's one of the difficult aspects of having surveys to begin with, is they're not useful unless you're asking the right questions.
Yep. And in our experience, changing the questions means that your results vary from year over year. So you just don't have a consistent direction because it takes so long to get stuff done that a year is sometimes we haven't finished all the things or any of the things that were, asked for the year before. So I can tell you that the first batch of questions was the hardest for us. We really scrutinized what the questions were and what the voice was and the direction where they were coming from when we started doing them the first year. Since then, we have largely recycled the questions year over year with tweaks and removed some stuff that we didn't think actually was actionable or really mattered. But it's the things that were the hardest ones were like, you really want to know something, but it's hard to explain in the question why it's important. And so there are some easy questions like, what feature would you like to see next? But it's not super useful because everyone has unlimited wants. It's like the first thing everyone learns in economics 101 is like the unlimited desires of all of your users and customers. Everyone wants everything. And so you will have mixed results across the board and you don't really know how actionable that it is. But the how you use WordPress question, or the how do you use BuddyPress? Do you use it for academia? Do you use it for an alumni network? Do you use it as a blog, a CMS, whatever? Those are the ones that are really informative or reinforcing of the decisions that are being made that actually really don't result in any action at all whatsoever. They're just useful to know that you're still on the right track. So the questions in these surveys are sometimes very broad, but WordPress's is always really lengthy. The amount of time, gosh, I mean, you know, I hate to gush over Mercy Me too much, but boy, the charts, the graphs, the like correlations that she's able to find between everything, it would be really interesting to see what anyone, whoever compiles the results for WordPress's surveys. Aside from, I know Matt has had some interesting slides in the state of the word just based on some of the data, but it'll be neat to see what the format is of the user-facing side of this data. Hopefully it's, if Mercy Me helps out, they'll be great for sure, but I'll be interested to see what happens.
WP Campus Online, which is the online virtual extension of WP Campus, which is the higher ed WordPress and Higher Ed conference that's held every year, was held in Sarasota, Florida. That was the first one. And then this year is held in Buffalo, New York. There's a call for speakers for WP Campus Online 2018. Will actually take place Tuesday, January 30th, 2018. And you'll be able to participate and watch the event from the comfort of your home, next to a fire with your laptop or whatever device you want to have, sipping on hot cocoa, thinking, you know, I'll be thinking of Triple J and flannel. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Are you uncomfortable? That seems uncomfortable. All right. Anyways, they're looking for speakers.
If I'm wearing a flannel, then I am very comfortable. Okay, yeah. I am warm and cozy by the fire. I'm comfortable. Yeah.
With those cute slippers. But WP Campus.
Funny ears on them.
All right. WP Campus is looking for speakers. The call for speakers will close at 12 midnight Pacific time on Friday, November 10th, 2017. And you can find all the information about this event on online.wpcampus.org. And Rachel Cardin and Rachel Cherry. Sorry, she had a name change. Does a really good job organizing this event with a suite of volunteers. Definitely check that out. It's going to be a free event, so you won't have to pay anything to check it out and to watch it. And they're going to use Crowdcast again to stream live virtual sessions. So pretty cool event, something you can look forward to at the beginning of next year.
Rachel's done an awesome job with taking and really running with the WP Campus idea. And so year over year, it's cool to see this evolve and change and still stay affordable and watch it travel. And it's really cool.
Do you know how it started? Because I find it fascinating that if you go back to the very beginning, Rachel made this tweet and says, I would love it. It would make her aware. I forget the exact tweet, but it was like, she would love it if there is a conference out there, a WordPress conference dedicated to WordPress in higher ed. And a lot of people retweeted her or gave her the support that she needed. And one tweet turned into WP Campus in Sarasota, Florida in 2016. And as they say, the rest is history, and it's evolving history as we go. So what started out as a tweet is now a reality, both physical conferences and online. So congrats to her for like taking a thought or a suggestion or a dream and turning it into a reality.
Yep. And it's kind of an untapped market at that point. I mean, not completely, but it covers all competencies. It's not just writers. It's staff, it's bloggers, it's developers, designers, you know, but still very specifically focused towards higher ed. So it's a much needed niche within the WordPress user community. And it's awesome to have a dedicated event for it. It's like when the Publishers WordCamp in Denver, had WordCamp for Publishers.
Yeah.
I still really want there to be a plugin camp. Just, you know, put that out there. But, you know, I think we're at a time in WordCamps and in WordPress conferences where all these niches can easily carve themselves out and find 50, 100, 150 people to attend and have a great time on a very specific topic.
So if I had a beer or a drink or a bottle of liquor, I wouldn't pour it all out, but I'd pour some out for Firebug. Firebug is officially being put to rest, will officially not be supported anymore. In fact, today, November 1st, and there's a lot of sentimental Firebug remembrances that were published on Twitter after Mozilla announced that it will reach end of life in the Firefox browser. And it was one of the first tools that allowed developers, browser-based tools that allowed developers to easily inspect HTML and debug JavaScript. It was actually merged into Firefox DevTools. And it's actually a lot of the aspects of it are merged into the actual core browser itself. And some of the tweets from people said Firebox, from some folks, was Firebox. Why did I say Firebox? I got Firebug and Firefox combined into one word. It'd be Firebox. But Firebug was a rare kind of tool that instantly doubled the productivity of every developer it touched. I actually came across it, and it was actually really cool for the first time when I saw that I can make changes in this console and see them live on an actual website. So what used to, especially when it came to CSS, I was so used to editing CSS, uploading the CSS file, clicking refresh, hoping that it would bust the cache and seeing my change. What a pain in the rear that was, and how, you know, it took so much time. But to be able to have an inspector to see an element I wanted to change and then mess around with that CSS within the browser and then just copy and paste that into the actual CSS file, that was a huge time saver. So Firebug was a really amazing thing for so many people. And John, would you like to get sentimental? Do you have any fond memories of Firebug?
Let me wipe the tears from my eyes first. Oof, I mean, this is a sad day. The brilliant thing about Firebug is just how ahead of its time that it was for where the web was back then. Like, web development was just starting to be at a point where
we're talking about December 2006.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, you were kind of flying blind for a really long time. You could view source, yeah. Right click view source. And so that you had to decompile everything from there. I mean, there was no easier way to surf through or do anything. It was basically a JavaScript HTML based applet in the browser window that you were in. It's actually a lot like the WordPress debug bar plugin, where it is just part of the website. It is injected into it, and then there it is. And so a lot of the things that we use in a WebKit inspector in Chrome and Safari started those original decisions and the original design and layout and tools and debugging and console came from Firebug. They were invented there first, really. So the team of, you know, inventors and designers and developers that started and built Firebug inspired really an entire future generation of web developers that probably wouldn't have had an outlet if not for the pursuit of amazing tools like Firebug and then Inspector going forward. So without it, the web would not be where it is today anywhere close. So it's a big deal to say goodnight to Firebug, but it lives on spiritually through the Chrome and WebKit and Safari Inspector and the various versions and other browsers.
So throughout the history of Firebug, there's this one, I don't know if there's many, but there's this one pivotal moment that Firebug creator Joe Hewitt said. He eventually moved on to Facebook, but he made the tool open source in December of 2006. And he kind of put some feelers out there about whether it should be a commercial product. And he got a lot of support, and he thinks that he could have made a pretty good living maybe by making it a commercial product. But he says that he didn't feel like it was the right thing to do, and he loved working on Firebug because he knows it made a lot of people happy, and he decided that Firebug will remain free and open source. And that's one of those huge pivotal moments, probably looking back. And you wonder, you know, would Firebug have had the success it's had, you know, since then as a commercial product? And it seems like it would have, based on, you know, the amount of support he had back then. But you just wonder how it would have evolved, and because it was a commercial product, would it have eventually been able to be merged into the Firefox core itself? Who knows? I mean, you know, at least it being free and open source makes that a lot easier to do. Mm-hmm. But again, one of those moments in the past where as a developer, you have a product that so many people like, and you could tell. I mean, they're telling you, hey, we'll pay for this product. You know, we love this thing, but you release it free and open source. You know, it's just one of those.
Yep.
Interesting moments to look back on that also a lot of plugin developers in the WordPress community kind of deal with, where they create this tool and they know it helps out a lot of people. They could probably make a few bucks from it, but no, they decide to keep it free and open source.
Well, we have a culture of making it really hard to sell tools like with software. People will pay for an IDE, maybe. PHP Storm is a good example of an editor that people will pay for because it's just that good, or they like not having to worry about it. But when it comes to other types of tools, everyone kind of has a tendency to lean towards the tool being free or baked in. So I think the reality is that if Joe would have kept the source for Firebug private and monetized it, that it's more likely that, I mean, back in those days and even earlier days, I guess the culture, the source for Firebug suddenly becomes more popular. And so it's a target. And the second that that source code for Firebug gets leaked or ends up on some Ware site or gets torrented or something, then his business model is instantly done because it gets duplicated. Someone releases it for free anyways. And then we're all off to the races. So it's really hard to know what the right thing is to keep private and what the right thing is to keep public, which is, I think, honestly, why, at least today, you look at add-on stores like the folks at Give have, or EDD or WooCommerce is a good example, where having a free and open core makes all the difference. And then having all of the little features are little obvious value adds that seem a little bit more natural to pay for. And so the one thing, right, if that model worked back in 2006, Firebug could have been free and open source, but he could have built little add-on store inside Firebug that say, hey, do you want PHP and Xdebug support? If you do, here's a $10 add-on. Do you want to have linting for JavaScript or CSS baked right into this? It's $10. Do you want syntax highlighting in your CSS? $10 or whatever, right? Like, yeah, maybe that would have been something to do, but in the end, no one really wants to pay for the tools, and they all, it's a race to the bottom, kind of. So we are all thankful and better for this having been open and free from the get-go. But, you know, lessons learned, right? So
Mozilla says that more than 1 million people are still using the Firebug add-on. The developer tool, Firefox Developer Tools, has a guide for migrating from Firebug. And although there are still a lot of features missing from Firefox DevTools that were in Firebug, Mozilla is tracking them, and they're working to bring greater parity between the two. And the Firebug extension will be discontinued with the release of Firefox Quantum, version 57 in November of 2017, which is this month. So
I want to know, when we're talking about surveys and statistics and results, of the million people that are still using Firebug, how many of them also still use their AOL.com email address? Right? Like, how many people are just holding out? They just like it because they like it, and that's my tool, and that's, I don't know.
Hey, that may be or may not be why I'm still running Windows 7. It's the tool. I like it. I'm holding out, man. I am holding out until I'm forced to upgrade to a future version of Windows.
And Firefox Quantum, to me, sounds like a Fallout reference, like a Nuka-Cola Quantum. I wonder if that's – I mean, I could just read and learn and figure out why it's named Quantum. But I like that it might be a pseudo – ambiguous nod to Nuka-Cola in the Firefox Quantum name.
And we did say it in today's show. We didn't specifically talk about anything, I guess, related to it. But Gutenberg 1.6 has been released. It has a slew of new features and a lot of little nuances that were fixed. They actually focused a bit on their writing UI. So there's a lot of UI element changes that were addressed. So if you are testing Gutenberg, please download and install 1.6 and give it a test run, and give the team your feedback. Let them know what you think.
And I have to be honest, I haven't tried it yet. I'm a bad tester for this. I haven't had time to test it. I really, really wanted to, and I saw all the tweets and all that happen, but I haven't tried 1.6 yet. I wanted to sit down and give it the like dedicated time and respect that it deserves. And then that time never happened, and then here we are. And because Gutenberg 1.6 wasn't on our agenda, I didn't know we were going to talk about it, and so I am unprepared.
Okay. Yeah, true. Yeah, put this on me. I get it. So you want me to start a crowdfunding campaign so we can fund your time to test Gutenberg?
How much is that going to cost?
Another $50K?
You know what, Jeff? If that's something that you want to do, go for it, buddy. You have at it. It's all you.
All right.
I am I'm happy for you to give that a try.
So
I will review it for free for what it's worth. I will look at Gutenberg 1.6 and on. I am happy to continue the Gutenberg updates at free of charge.
So that's about it for our news stories this week. Let's dive into our picks this week. And my pick this week is a Hero Press essay that I contributed to called it was devoted to Kim Parcell, the late Kim Parcell, who passed away two years ago. And the essay is entitled A Family Well Loved. And in fact, today, I believe, the WordPress Foundation is supposed to announce the winner of the Kim Parcell Travel Scholarship to WordCamp US. I checked today. I didn't see it before the show was published, but I think they're going to release that today. So this is well-timed, this essay. Various members of the WordPress community who knew and interacted with Kim sort of wrote their experience on what the WordPress community meant to Kim. And a lot of great stuff in here from Drew Janes and Carrie Dills and other members of the community. But when I think about what the WordPress community meant to Kim, the word that comes to me was family. And I sort of explained, you know, to really understand Kim's take with the WordPress community, you had to realize the environment that she was in, her physical environment, where she was a middle-aged woman who lived off a dirt road on top of a hill in southern rural Ohio. And, you know, I mean, literally, this is where she lived. And she was often by herself, maintaining a 12-acre piece of property. She only had a few neighbors up and down the road, and she received internet access from towers that broadcasted wireless signals similar to cell phone towers. So her internet was slow and spotty, but she was able to make time to join us, to join me in WordPress Weekly every Friday night when I had it on TalkShoe. She was there. And what I realized is that my show and the ability for people to call in to TalkShoe and we could hear each other's voices, it gave her an opportunity to – she was just kind of getting into WordPress at the time. And so my show was her entrance to meeting and talking with the who's who of WordPress at the time. And she would spend hours with us on there during our after-hours sessions where people would come and go. I'd invite people on, and it'd be like we were having 8-hour shows. And what this did is that helped her establish some long-lasting relationships in the WordPress community that led to better opportunities in the future for her. So in a location, in a physical location where many around her haven't used or never even heard of WordPress, the WordPress community through WordPress Weekly and then eventually online was her outlet for her to be around like-minded people. And she treated many members of the WordPress community as her second family. I mean, and she took that responsibility very seriously. And that's why she was affectionately known as WP Mom, because she always wanted to know how you were doing. She'd give you a hug at a WordCamp. She'd tell you, look, you got to look after yourself and others, you know, secondary. You got to take care of yourself. And she was always, you know, stern too when she needed to be. Hey, you know, you need to knock that stuff out. You know, if she saw you involved in WP drama, she'd put you in your place and try and keep everybody on an even keel. But just a great essay, a great dedication to Kim. I think about Kim a lot. In fact, you know, through social media, through Twitter, I'll even search back through posts, looking back through an archive for news stories, and I'll see her name pop up, and I'll get all the feels yet again. And every now and then I'll go back and read the sort of obituary I wrote on WP Tavern back in January of 2015, something I'll never forget. And again, it's very awesome at the WordPress Foundation, Matt Mulloway, and especially Jane Wells or Jane Milo at the time. She was a big proponent of this and advocated for the scholarship. And now hopefully other women in a similar situation as her will be able to take advantage of the scholarship and be able to fulfill their desires and dreams of WordPress with the help of financial aid and what have you from the foundation. So just good stuff. I invite anybody or everybody to go take a read of that Hero Press essay and share it around. And it also includes a lot of great photos, both of Kim herself and photos she took on her property because she was an avid photographer. Something I didn't really know much about until after she passed. And she's got a lot of great photos on her website. And a big shout out there to Drew Janes, who, if I remember, is still maintaining her website and her other web properties for her so that they live on instead of turning into a 404 error squatter getting a hold of them. So big shout out to you for doing that. Thank you, buddy. And that's my pick of the week.
I feel like I shouldn't even talk about mine. I mean, Kim's is like a heartfelt. That's a big deal. I miss Kim a lot. I used to run into her traveling around at WordCamps all over the place, and she would lecture me all the time about all the things I was doing wrong. So it's nice to have someone tell you like it is and not be afraid of giving you criticism and feedback and know that it's coming from a warm, loving, good place. Yes, for sure. And that, yeah, definitely check out that A Family Well Loved is a great post. My pick of the week is one I feel like I've talked about once before already, at least on the show, but there's a plugin that is by everybody's friend and a prolific plugin author, Pippin Williamson.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of the guy.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Plugin is called the Transients Manager. And it provides a UI for editing and looking at the some of the little bits and pieces that WordPress doesn't show you. So the description is, it's a developer's tool that provides a UI to manage your site's transients. You can view, search, edit, and delete transients at will. A toolbar option is also provided that allows you to suspend transient updates and help with testing and debugging. So long story short, it kind of helps identify a lot of weird, invisible problems that a WordPress site might have. And it gives you or gives users a interface within WP Admin to kind of pluck at some of the invisible database entries and things that WordPress kind of hides from you normally. So something's acting weird and you don't have a way to play around with it. The Transients Manager plugin is a good way to start looking and seeing what it is that's around there. Transients get used by feeds and some core updates and plugin updates can end up stashed there, some cron related things. So it gives you a window into some of the other things that you'd never otherwise be able to see. It only has like 8,000 installs, which seems low to me, but it's definitely a correct number. So I'm surprised
Come on, who out there knows what a transient is?
I mean, I guess, but you know,
based on my reading, I have an idea of what transients are, but when I see them mentioned, it's usually in the form of getting rid of them or clear them out because they're there for too long, or what have you. I mean, would you suggest that cleaning up the transients in a WordPress site would be like a good, I guess, routine, something you would add to your routine of cleaning up a WordPress site or maintenance level type routine?
You shouldn't have to, because transients usually clean themselves. That's the difference between...
Yeah, they're like supposed to expire, right?
Yep. And so like an option's there as a setting. It's just set what it is, but a transient is going to go away. And so it's pretty rare that something gets stuck or that something is persistent as a transient. Transients also can end up in memory. So if you're using a persistent cache, then something might end up as in the cache instead of a transient. So it kind of depends. You don't normally ever need to do anything with transients, but if you are developing a website for somebody, or if you're in the middle of trying to troubleshoot something that's kind of acting weird, there's really nothing to lose by flushing or deleting those transients out, because WordPress will just create them right away or just recreate them. So it's kind of useful to be able to see some of these things. It's a neat developer tool that I've used recently in the past and figured I'd bring up. So that's my pick of the week.
Maybe I'll stall in on the tavern and get scared at what I see. That would be interesting. You know, now that you say a window into what I can't see, I may just install it just to see what's there, just for the heck.
You should. It's interesting how often it gets used and what it gets used for. It's like, let's say you when you go into WordPress's dashboard, I guess it's on single site. If you're at dashboard and updates, if you want to like force a core update. There's like a little button that says like force install check, I think, or install now. All that does is just flush the transient and then force the request to happen. Because otherwise that request will wait. It'll say, oh, well, I checked 11 hours ago. We've got 1 hour to go. So I won't check for a core update until after the transient is expired. So, you know, if you want to, force an update like that, you could delete the transient. Well, you don't want to go into the database and delete it directly. You want to do it the right way through the through an admin UI or something. Or if you're not familiar, if you don't want to use WPCLI and you want to use a GUI or an interface for this, then Transients Manager is probably the one that I would pick to do that. And you can't really break anything by poking around with it. There's nothing that's in a transient usually that isn't instantly designed to be regenerated and brought back to life. So you can't really break anything by using it.
Well, that's your pick of the week, and that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. For the next couple of weeks, we've got news, and then there's our Giving Thanks episode. After that, at the end of the month, we'll have a WordCamp US preview. Maybe we'll bring out a couple people onto the show, talk about that. December 6th, there will be no show. I'll be in Eastern Tennessee in the Smoky Mountains, enjoying a little downtime before things ramp up again. When I get back, December 13th, we'll do a recap of WordCamp US. Possibly have Matt Mulawig on that show, or maybe on December 20th. We'll see. We haven't had Matt on all year, so I'm running out of time to get him on the show. I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about on December 13th, especially from the State of the Word. And then on December 27th, John, it'll be your first time doing the WordPress year-end review with me. So we'll take a look back at some of the stories that made headlines in WordPress throughout the throughout 2017 and kind of maybe even see where some of the things we mentioned early on that launched, see where they're at. Maybe do a little progress update. So that'll be a great show. And then, God, next thing you know, it'll be 2018, and we'll be doing this all over again, and we'll be hitting, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, we might not make episode 300 by the end of the year. So our first episode of 2018 might be 300. Ooh. Wouldn't that be a way to start?
That would be a good way. It's a great way to start 2018. I mean, 2017 was such a piece of crap year, right, that we could start the year off right with a nice round number. So I'm excited to be around for that.
Excellent. So you can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on WPTavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, where I still only have 140 characters. Thank God. J-E-F-F-R-0. And John?
This is what people listen for every week, Jeff. They want to know, did you get the 200 and whatever it is character count? 240, is that what it is?
280.
280?
Yeah.
I guess that's double.
40 plus 140.
That's what I want to hear about. I'm excited. I anticipate whether or not you got. I mean, I'm still at 70 characters. They've restricted my character count. So,
I'm anxious to get double the amount of characters to complain about the unlimited amount of injustices in the world on Twitter, which apparently that's what Twitter has become.
Tweets that have 280 characters in them are silly looking. They don't look right. They just aren't. Yeah. It's a lot of reading in a tweet. Yeah, not. I don't like it. Like it's kind of a big turnoff.
We're gonna have to add a estimated time to read for tweets now. Yeah, where can we find you?
GitHub and Twitter at JJJ, on my blog at JJJ.blog, and if someone wants to buy any of the things that I try to occasionally talk about and sell online at PluginsLoaded.com.
And that is weird bunny ears by the fire. All right, never mind.
Cozied up. You can find me cozied up next to a firebox with my bunny slippers and a flannel, sipping some hot cocoa.
With Penny and Paw. That kind of sounds wonderful, actually. So that's going to do it for this episode. Everybody enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Keep on WordPressing, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all.
Say bye, John.
Bye, John.